Hello, welcome to Hat Trick. I'm Jordan Della Coltman. Elliot Tanti is with me. Braden, nowhere to be found. That's okay. It's a busy time. Let's just acknowledge that. He's probably off there, you know, smacking steel with some other gentleman. He is, in fact, in the Three Musketeers at the Citadel. That's the reference. Nothing untoward. Although it sounded a little untoward when I said it. I am perfect. I should be in the show. Hey, Elliot, what do you think of this goatee I've been rocking here?
You know what? It's early stages, but it's early in the season. And you know what? CFL's coming right around the corner. I think when you're ready to go for it, you'll be ready.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. The enthusiasm was just so palpable in your tone. Let's get to it. Here's topic one. Okay. Topic one. I mean, really, you and I shouldn't be talking facial hair. You had a beard at like 14. I can barely grow a beard. So you have me in that category. But what I want to talk about today has nothing to do with facial hair. In fact, very little facial hair at all. It was I don't know. Did you catch the total eclipse of the sun today in Edmonton? You weren't on the line of totality, were you?
No, I wasn't on the line of totality, and no, I missed it. But it sounds like it probably was very unsafe to view unless you had like the appropriate sort of stuff to put on, because it was very bright here in Edmonton today. And I think some people like actually damaged their eyes.
They probably did. I mean, I think that happens every year. You're supposed to have like welder's glass, but they hand out those little like eclipse glasses. There's no way that little film in there is actually safe for your eyes, but that's fine. Nice little market for whoever's selling those. Regardless, topic one does have to do with a total eclipse, but of a different kind. And here's where I'm going with this. We are at the very end of March Madness. I would like to take the opinion that the women's tournament for the first time, maybe in history, eclipsed in terms of eyeballs on the men's tournament. I think there was more attention in general, both viewing on TV, social media, clicks, all of that stuff. I think the women's tournament was a bigger deal this year than the men's tournament on aggregate. Tell me why I'm right or wrong, Elliot.
Well, I don't know that you're right or wrong. I think it's yet to be determined. Like, we're still in the final four on the men's side. I think what they've done very well is devoting an entire weekend to women's basketball at the collegiate level, and thus made people talk about it all weekend while they were setting up the men's game. I don't think it has to be an either or. I think you can do both really well, and that's what they've done here. They've made space for the men's game, but they've made a much more space for the women's game and an opportunity to talk about it after. It's not eclipsed. It wasn't eclipsed by the men's game, or maybe it eclipsed the men's game because it was the end, but it had its space to do so. And that's exactly what we should be doing with women's sports. It should operate in parallel in all ways, in payment, in viewership, in attention, and in opportunity. And that's what they did this weekend. And frankly, it's awesome. That's great. That's exactly what the game needs. It was to perfection, like no other sport does in basketball.
Yeah, definitely a fantastic month for collegiate sports, collegiate basketball. But I do think the women's game just took it to a different level this year. And obviously, you know, I think it's overstated to say that this is just the Caitlin Clark factor, because I think that that's unfair to all the other athletes and all those other programs who have some phenomenal talent on them, have some phenomenal story, created some fantastic drama. Yes, she is a part of that. And I think that what's wonderful about how her impact has rippled is that, you know, it is a tide rises all boats scenario where, like, yes, there are casual fans who were drawn into certain games, that LSU game, because of her. And that's important and that's valuable. And she can be the, you know, the torchbearer, if you will, for this generation of women basketball. But equally, I would argue, once people tuned in, they realized what they had been missing. And I think that the platforms, you know, in Canada, TSN, but, you know, ESPN in the States, and like the platforms recognize the value for themselves in a way I had never seen before. And in a more sincere and authentic way than I have seen in the past. So often this tournament, other women's tournaments that have taken place at the same time as men's tournaments, have always felt like some type of tokenism or some type of, you know, extra element. They've never been given, as you say, the same level of space. And here they have, and it's fantastic. It was awesome. Obviously difficult for Caitlin Clark fans, Iowa fans, to see it end the way it did. Fantastic final game, final four. I mean, that LSU game, as I said, really was, as far as I was concerned, like the tournament game of the whole, you know, the game of the tournament, I should say, because it, the, you know, it was that the last year's final, those two teams back at each other. That's the kind of rivalry. That's the kind of story we all look for in sports, to be able to have that. And sometimes sports, unlike a Hollywood movie, doesn't have that storybook finish. And Caitlin Clark comes up one game short, and, you know, her collegiate career ends, but her next chapter begins. And maybe it's one of those stories where, like, 10 years from now, when whatever team she plays for, the WNBA sets some kind of, like, you know, win streak record or something, that looks back at, oh man, she's still carrying that chip on her shoulder from losing that championship game back to back. Like, there's so many more chapters in her story. And most importantly, there's so many more chapters in women's basketball to be written. And that's why I think it was just an exciting month for it.
Well, isn't that just it, right? Like, it maybe wasn't a storybook for Caitlin Clark fans, as you said. And yeah, absolutely, for sure. But it was a storybook for someone, right? Yep, it was important absolutely. To someone. And at the very least, and I'll say this very directly, like, you and I are not the biggest basketball fans on this show. By far, and we've actually been critical of the game, and me to the point of being a meme at some points. And I was interested, and I was bought in, and I wanted to see it. And I feel like I've watched enough to be able to talk about it tonight. When's the last time I've ever said that, even for an NBA Finals series? That's outstanding. And that the manifestation of that was through the women's game. Oh, chef's kiss. Perfect.
No, totally. And again, as you say, like, you're right. South Carolina, it's their final, their storybook finish. They get that, right? And another, you know, great program that deserves all that credit. Anyway, that piece of it. Now, at the time of recording, the final game for the men's is going on. I don't know how closely you followed that tournament either. I guess that's the other question. Like, has it kept your attention? Has it not? You know, and where does that piece of it come down? Because for me, I kind of stopped watching the men's at all. I was just watching the women's games because I was more intrigued by the storyline there. Do you know what I mean? And again, admittedly, unlike Braden, I'm not like following it throughout the entire tournament. I'd have it on and I would see what the scores were and I'd stay if it was an exciting close game. That's where I'm at. I'll check the kind of the score lines later, but how much more have you watched from the men's side?
Not a lot. I mean, I watched part of the game tonight and then we were going to record. So I was kind of gearing up for that. But, you know, basketball is not my favorite game to watch. I much more prefer it in person. I think you get more of the momentum and the feeling of the game in it. You know, happy I saw it. You know, there's some excitement being a Canadian, you know, that gentleman whose name I don't remember, which probably speaks to my commitment to the sport, has declared himself eligible to the draft. And there's been some interesting debate around that. Probably detrimental to his team. Might have been something you do after the national finals. But anyway.
Edie or Eddie?
Yeah. And I just, you know, I was watching and it's
Braden's not here to. Braden's not here to.
It's not going so well for Purdue right now, at least the last time I checked in. But anyway, like, it's fine. It's good. It's collegiate sports. Now they just need a union.
There you go. Well, maybe that's the next step. All right, let's leave it there. That's topic one.
Hey, podcast listeners. My name is Larice Campbell, and along with my co-host, former Olympic bobsledder, Alicia Olson, I am so excited to introduce you to the Mother Pucker Podcast. And if you love the Oilers like we do, you are going to love our show. It's just two gals who aren't afraid to drop the gloves and throw some hot takes about the boys in blue and orange. Whether you're a massive hockey fan like us or just looking for some new voices talking about the Oilers' blue line, or lack thereof, we promise the show is for you. So subscribe now and tell your friends. It's time for the Mother Pucker Podcast.
Okay, topic two here. We are 10 days away, Elliot, from the end of the regular season and the beginning of the what really matters, the playoffs for the NHL. Obviously, as Oilers fans, you know, we know we're in. The X is next to the name. That's the important piece. Hell of a turnaround. You know, when you look at this season on a whole, one of the worst starts in the last couple of years, they turn it into one of the most sort of crazy runs through December into January, almost breaking an NHL win streak record. And then it's kind of been a little bit seesaw-y, but they had done enough to dig themselves out of the hole. And now they've put themselves, obviously, as I say, in a playoff spot. Now the question is just, where do they finish? And equally, where does everybody else shake out? So what we know right now, obviously, is is, and we'll focus mostly on the West because that's what we're talking about. I'll run you through it. Obviously, in the East, we know Boston, Florida, Toronto, they're all clinched. New York Rangers, Carolina, they're clinched. The Tampa Bay Lightning are clinched regardless. They're currently in a wild card spot. They probably are not catching the Toronto Maple Leafs there. They're about 6 points back. So that's locked up from the Atlantic side. It's the Metro that has a little bit of wiggle room because Detroit is, you know, sitting there with 84 points and the Islanders are sitting at 85. The question I have for you is on that side only because looking at it for me, I was a little bit surprised. But like, talk about a turnaround for the Detroit Red Wings, right? Only a couple of years ago, they were in the Bedard sweepstakes. Like they were a dreadful team in need of some desperate rebuild. And they have slowly but surely gotten better on the backs of some young talent. But yeah, they're knocking at the door and they've got the Pittsburgh Penguins right now in a statistical tie with points. And they've got the Capitals, the Flyers, and technically the Devils, although they have kind of an outside shot of still getting in. Like that's going to be a race right down to the wire there in the East for that final wild card spot.
Yeah. I mean,
potentially third in the Metro. Sorry. That's still up for grabs.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is the thing to watch is that the Eastern Conference has been very exciting. Someone described it today. I think it was Mark Spector, and God forbid I'd quote Mark Spector, but he was right on this one. You know, it seemed for a while there, like none of these teams actually wanted the playoffs. And they've all kind of picked up their socks and figured it out, including the New York Islanders, who I think are a bit of a hot streak right now.
Sorry, they did what to their socks?
They picked them up.
Is that the phrase? I always thought it was they pulled up their socks.
Well, it could have been. Yeah, it is.
Like, I think it's one of those things, like in the old days when you had like no elastics in your socks. And so if you really wanted to be taken seriously, you pulled your socks up. But you'd have to pick them up first, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess that's my, anyway, whatever. That was
sorry.
Was not correct. Anyway, the teams have picked up their socks. You know, I think the Detroit Red Wings, everyone wants to see them in the playoffs. It's a young, dynamic team. There's lots that's been done there to make them exciting. And I'm glad you've highlighted them. I don't think they're the true story in the Eastern Conference, though. The true story in the Eastern Conference is the Pittsburgh Penguins and Sidney Crosby tying Wayne Gretzky for the most point-a-game seasons, I think at 19. Basically willing the Pittsburgh Penguins at least into a playoff race and very likely to make the playoffs this year. I think the Eastern Conference has been the story. The Western Conference, it's going to be about seeding. And whoever comes out of the West is going to be the favorite. They are so strong. The only reason why they wouldn't be is that they're so beat up by getting to the Stanley Cup Finals that the Eastern Conference team might have a chance. But yeah, the East is great. And this is what we love about the Gary Bettman point era is that it's meant to bring parity. And you had five teams fighting for two spots and it's still going on. You know, I think the Flyers are probably out of it now. At least they're struggling. But so now it's down to four, but it's still, you know, we're still, you said 10 days. I think it's even fewer now. At least when our listeners will actually listen to this, like this is exciting. This is what you want. And the fact is any one of those teams that makes it in is going to challenge the New York Rangers and the Boston Bruins because the parity in this league is just awesome. It sucks for dynasties, but it makes it great watching for people that enjoy hockey. And, you know, I can't complain. I love the Eastern Conference race that's going on right now.
Okay, so let's talk Western Conference, and we'll get into the specifics of matchups and what we think of there. But obviously, as we say, Dallas number one, and in the Central number one, Colorado, Winnipeg, they're all locked in. Vancouver and Edmonton locked in. And then the third spot in the Pacific technically up for grabs because there's a single point differential between Vegas, who's currently tied with Vancouver at the time of recording in the third period, and the LA Kings. And then Nashville being pretty secure, I would argue, in that spot, although, you know, they could lose a couple games here and St. Louis could still sneak in. But I have a feeling Nashville on the tear they've been on is going to pretty much lock that spot up. They sit there at 94 points and well back of Winnipeg. So they're definitely going to be a wild card team. The question is this. The Oilers, again, at time of recording, 3 points, 4 points back of Vancouver, possibly, you know, six, depending on the outcome of that Vancouver game, but they've got a game in hand and a game against still to come. So there is definitely a possibility Edmonton somehow again, miraculously, considering where we were in October, finds a way to win the division. When you look at the potential matchups, of course, playoffs started today, they'd be playing LA, unless Vegas wins, and then they'd be playing Vegas. Like, it's that tight. But most likely, they're playing LA, Vegas. Which of those two teams do you favor as the matchup, round one?
LA and Vegas? I mean, I think round one, you take Vegas in that situation just because you're not sure where Mark Stone is at. I think Thomas Hertl might be playing tonight. I have the game on in the background, but I haven't watched well enough to know that he's playing or not. Jordan, I'll go a bit further. Here's what I want to see. I want to see the Oilers play Vegas in the first round and win. I want to see them play Vancouver in the second round and win. And I want to see them play the Avalanche in the third round and win. That is the best story and the most exciting and enticing story for the Edmonton Oilers. Outside of that, like, it doesn't matter. You throw all those names in the hat and you get them out in whatever way it looks. Whatever it is, it's going to be incredibly difficult. All of those teams are good. And if it's, the other options are the Predators and the Kings, like, that's going to be tough and interesting too. Like, it's going to be tough. But I guess today, if you asked me, I would want to see the Oilers play the Golden Knights. If for no other reason, beating the Stanley Cup champions in the first round gives you a bit of swagger heading into the second and the third, hopefully. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think for the Oilers, if it was me, I would say that based strictly on how I've seen this team perform against these other teams, like, they have to be thinking right now, it'd be great to catch Vancouver and catch Nashville first round. Yes, the travel's not great, but they've had Nashville's number for a decade. Like, Leon Draisaitl seems to just absolutely love, barbecue before a game, because when he plays in Nashville, he puts up ridiculous numbers. I think that Nashville is a very confident team right now. I don't think that Nashville is a deep playoff team the way they're currently built. This was a team that was selling parts. I mean, literally selling parts to us last year. So I would take that matchup first. Secondly, I do think that the LA matchup for me is still the favorable one, because again, not only have they played well against LA again this year, but I think the Edmonton Oilers live rent free in Drew Doughty's head. I think the Oilers are just so in the psyche of what LA has had to deal with the last 2 years. And look, eventually maybe that karma comes up for you, but at the truth be told, like, I don't have faith in their goaltending. I think they have the weakest goalies they've had in the last 5 years. I think Korpisalo was a much stronger goalie for them last year in round one than I think Talbot, even on his best day, is right now. I like the way we played against LA the other day. I think we're one of the few teams in the league that seems to have no problem breaking their trap. And the funny thing about that is they built that trap, I think, specifically to beat us, because that's what they saw was the struggle in the playoffs, is catching us on the rush was not something they wanted to do. And obviously, they've had some struggles their own. Both our team and their team changed coaches this year. So, there's some story there. And as you say, Vegas, I mean, I would rather play Vegas sooner rather than later too, if it's a question about health, because we all know that they've got, half a salary cap sitting on the, IR line that's just going to all of a sudden come appear at some point in the playoffs if they can go on a deep run. And I don't like that matchup as much. So I don't know. It's kind of one of those weird ones where, as you say, it's a toss up, but there's definitely like some perks to it. I think the best path forward for the Oilers is win the division, take on Nashville, and make your first round a little bit easier on yourselves, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I there's always advantage in winning the division, and this game on
Saturday, home ice, yeah,
Canucks is going to be a very important one, and it will be telling. It'll be interesting. It'll be the first time we've seen the Canucks since they cleaned our clocks early on in the season. Obviously, the Oilers were a very different team, as were the Canucks, frankly, at that point. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you want to win the division. I would favor the Oilers going in strong and healthy than weak in winning the division, though. And so, if that means once McDavid gets 100 assists, they bench him for a game, that's okay for me. It doesn't matter who you play. All of these series are going to be hard fought. They're going to be close. There's going to be tons of overtime. That's my prediction, at least. I could be wrong, but I think so. They're at least going to be close games, and it's going to be about the team that has, I think, gets a little bit lucky on the injury side and is also just like has the mental fortitude to do it. And I think the Oilers are starting to show that. I've been the pessimist of the Oilers all year. And, you know, since that 5-0 drubbing from the Dallas Stars, I've been pretty impressed with the maturity of the team, especially over this weekend.
All right, there it is. That's topic two.
Hey, if you're a fan of Formula One, then I've got the perfect podcast for you. The Pit Stop Podcast, presented by the Ordinary Podcasting Network. After every single race of the Formula One schedule, Jordan and Tyler will break it down, give you some news, analysis, insight, before answering your questions and setting you up for the next race. That's the Pit Stop Podcast, available everywhere you get your podcasts.
Okay. All right. Topic three. It's Masters week, Elliot. Golf's back. Proper golf's back. How are we feeling about that? You excited for the Augusta National, you know, weekend, all of pretty shots of all of those rich people who have gone down to enjoy, you know, some golf. What are the storylines? Who are the players? What are you looking for? Masters week.
Well, I would say, just to start off, I went and hit some balls at the driving range today for the first time this year. And I'll tell you, I will definitely not be at Augusta National this weekend. It was atrocious from start to finish. I couldn't have gotten off that range quicker. But no, I like the Masters for me is always a very interesting time. It's exciting. It's the whole intrigue and excitement around the green jacket. Anyone can win. The golf course is beautiful. Incredibly challenging, brings out the best in people. I mean, Scottie Scheffler is the one to beat, and that's been the story up until this point. World number one, just won the players really recently, or was it the Open? I don't know. I gave him a hats off for it, but it doesn't matter. Like, I think that it's always just, it's different. It's a different type of event. It's a different type of atmosphere. It's a different type of excitement. And it's frankly fun to watch. Like, it is just a beautiful course, very challenging, watching people do amazing things. And it tends to bring out the best in people. It's truly the one tournament in sport, I think, that is properly named in that it is to win the Masters, you're demonstrating just golf is an individual game. And at times it's played, you know, between the ears. And there's no other place where that aspect of the game is challenged more, and it's just wonderful to watch. Hopefully we get an exciting round. Hopefully it comes down to the fourth round and, you know, there's some big shots, but if not, it's okay too, because it's just wonderful to watch. And it's sort of reminds me of springtime and energy and fun. I don't know. I know I am the consummate golf fan and I raise golf way more than anyone else on this. There's the added dynamic of the live tour and who gets to play and who doesn't and the challenges of that. All of that aside, this is by far my favorite tournament in one of my favorite sports. And if you haven't had an opportunity to sit down, even watch a Thursday or a Friday, and of course, you know, the magic of Sunday, do it. It's worth it from just a sporting fan perspective, I think.
I agree. I think it's a great piece of sports television. It's got its own language, its own vibe. Obviously some very iconic sounds. That's where my attention's going this year. We're not doing hats off, but if I were, there'd be a Masters tip of the cap to Vern Lundquist, who's going to broadcast his final Masters, an iconic analyst and voice. I don't even know how long he's been doing it, but long enough. And so that's definitely one where I feel like, you know, listening to Jim Nantz, listening to just the sound of that tournament, there is just like a reverence or like a different energy to it. Not that golf in general doesn't kind of have its own language, but like the Masters, as you say, is kind of its own special thing. And yet, you know, it carries with it lots of baggage and all those kind of pieces of what's going on there too. I did think it was interesting. And I haven't done the research to look at this, but it's the first time I'd ever seen it. There was a women's amateur tournament held at Augusta last week. I thought that was interesting to see, you know, leading up to the Masters, considering we're not too far removed from, you know, women still not being members of the club itself. But all that said, you know, like so many iconic and historic, you know, institutions, I guess is the right word, you know, they all come with baggage, and that one certainly does. But yeah, I think it should be, you know, the biggest thing as a very casual golf fan, to be fair, like I enjoy playing golf a lot more than I enjoy watching golf, but it's one of those great sports to have on while you're doing other things. You know what I mean? If you're going to be cleaning the house or something on a weekend and there's a good tournament on, it's a great product to just put on. Do I sit down for 4 or 5 hours and watch every single shot? No, I am not that fan. I know there are lots of fans like that. Kudos to you. I know people who go to bars and watch like a full day of golf. Like that's again, hats off to you. I'm not that guy, but I will say the Masters just always seems to get me on Sunday. Like I'm always interested in seeing how it plays out. I'll try to find a TV if I'm out and about, or I'll make sure I've put it on while I'm doing something. I can't say the same even for the other majors, but the Masters just seems to hold that little cachet. And I think a lot of people show up this week in April and all of a sudden they know a lot about golf because it's the same kind of thing. It's a tradition. It's an excitement. You've got that like spring in the air, unless you're in Edmonton where it's still probably winter, but most of the world is coming out of a little bit of that hibernation. They're excited to get out into the world. And you've got this beautiful green, you know, seascape for your eyes to behold, and it's beautiful and it's exciting. It's all those things. It's the same thing with like the Kentucky Derby. It's like we're all horse experts for 3.5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like everybody thinks they've got some opinion or something on it. I think the Masters does the same thing. So I don't know. It's exciting. I'm excited for it. But anyway, who do you have looking at the field? Like, what are you excited? Who are you excited to see play? I guess is the next question there. Or do you have a favorite? I mean, obviously everyone wants to see what Tiger can do or whatever. I'm not sure there's much left in the old dog, but what do you have?
Yeah, I think my first hope is that Tiger makes the cut. That's always the first thing for me, and that will be what I'll be looking for. And then, you know, Rory's had a good start to the season, but Scottie Scheffler is chasing history as well too, and like the top of his game. There's a bunch of young golfers too, and you know, their stories become illuminated as the week goes through. That's part of the allure, I think, of watching the Masters, particularly on the weekend, is the nobodies that become somebodies in it throughout. That'll be what I'm watching for. It's when you have something so majestic as you've so well described, Jordan, these types of stories just tend to emerge. If I could take the show in a different direction, though, we're not doing hats off this week, but I want to note something special because it is the day. It is March 8th and
April 8th.
And I just wanted to note today marks a very important date in MLB and baseball history. It's the date in which Hank Aaron surpassed Babe Ruth for the most home runs, 715th home run. He did 50 years today. Under immense racial tension in the United States and threat, frankly. I was listening to stories today. An Edmonton sports broadcaster did a good job of talking about what a momentous occasion this was when it occurred, but actually how terrible it was. And when we talk about sports with legacies, baseball is certainly one of them. And I just want to mark that very important milestone in baseball's history in breaking the color barrier. We always talk about Jackie Robinson and different stories at different times and different challenges. But, you know, as I've said before, history doesn't repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes. And 50 years today, Hank Aaron faced immense pressure, personal pressure, and did the unthinkable. And it's a moment that we should all tip our hats to and be thinking about today, I think.
Yeah, well said. That's a great way to wrap up this show. Thanks for being here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button and tell a friend. That's how this show grows. That's how we can keep doing what we're doing and making it more and more fun for you. But, you know, as you can see, there used to be three of us. Now there's only two. I'm not going to say that's because of the number of listeners or the fact that you're not all out there telling your moms to listen, like I told you to last time. But it might be. You never know. All right. Until next time, that was Hattrick.
Hattrick is a member of the Ordinary Podcasting Network. It's produced every week by Jordan Dyler Coltman and Braden Dyler Coltman. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks for listening.
The Ordinary Podcasting Network wishes to acknowledge that the lands on which our conversations take place include Treaty 6 territory, the traditional meeting ground and home for many Indigenous peoples, including the Cree, Dene, Soto, Blackfoot, Métis, and the Nakota Sioux peoples, as well as the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations.
We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit whose footsteps have marked these lands for generations. And we extend our appreciation for the opportunity to live, create, and share stories on these territories.
The Ordinary Podcasting Network intends to engage in conversations and dialogue which acknowledge that reconciliation is not a destination, but a journey, and that we remain committed to practicing our craft in a decolonized space.